Thank you. It's an honor to be with the Northeast Florida Sisters in Crime family today. You don't have to take notes because everything that you will see today is going to be in a PDF, which I will supply to the chapter. The challenge when you are limited in time is that you can't get it all in. And so there are a lot of examples and links to videos that have been very helpful to me in learning how to write diverse characters. I have learned so much being a sibling and a member of both the National Sisters in Crime Organization and now 8 local chapters. So thank you for having me today. My story is very much a diverse story because I did not start out to become a writer. As you look at me now, you probably are making visual judgments about what kind of guy I am. I'm a white guy. I'm wearing the typical writer's outfit of blue jeans and casual coat and warm semi-March flannel. And there are a lot of things that says, right? If you're writing about me, you're going to make some judgments based upon what you see. But that doesn't necessarily describe the person inside. And that is one of the secrets of writing diverse characters, is that just because an individual may look a certain way, that does not necessarily represent who they are inside. And that, for me, is the essence and the excitement of mysteries and thrillers like the Jessica Ramirez series I write. You discover, over the course of the character arc, some secrets about these individuals that you did not expect. One of the other things that I did, especially with my first book, Chasing Vega, was translating it into Spanish. But I did not do the translation. Emma Gomez, who is an authentic Latina and one of my story consultants, wrote that book. And what I told her to do was stick to the wireframes, the key things about the plot and the story, but make the story accessible to that audience. What she told me when she read this book was, if I were reading this in Spanish, I would want to know a lot more about Jessica's family dynamic. By the nature of thriller writing thing, you have to keep the story going. It has to go really fast. You have to introduce your characters, and at the end of each chapter, you got to scare them, so you're going to want to turn the page. So I turned that over to her, and the book that she wrote is very different, but I hope is more accessible to the audience. The other project I am very proud of is Juliet and the Mystery Bug. At the beginning of the coronavirus adventure, my two grandchildren were very afraid, and they came to me and they said, Grandpa, can you explain how scared we should be about this? So my wife and I contacted the Centers for Disease Control and said, if we were going to write a book about mystery bugs, how could we teach people about things like social distancing, how to wash your hands properly, why we mask, and vaccine science for a new kind of vaccine that is based on a whole new pharmacology that hasn't been done before. It started out as one book. It ended up being three. We combined them all together. And I knew that there would be two audiences for this book. There would be the kids who would hear it and the parents who would read it. And what do we remember most about growing up and reading children's books? Probably Dr. Seuss. So I wrote this in the same poetic style as Dr. Seuss' Tetramic Pentameter. I wanted to channel the familiarity of Dr. Seuss's poetry into a timely topic that could teach both young people and their parents how to stay safe. I was very sensitive about inclusiveness in the story. This goes beyond the intention to try and write books that properly and effectively show people in their best lights. This was a business decision because I knew that the more people I could include in my stories, the bigger the audience would be. So in Mystery Bug, you'll notice that the accomplished scientists are women and men of color. My son-in-law, who is a recovering attorney, did all the graphics, and my test audience was my two grandkids. And Juliet is my granddaughter, who also happens to have Down syndrome. She is an absolute delight. So this book is just a cornucopia of diversity, and I'm going to send one home with all of you. Agency and specificity are the two real keys to writing great characters. When I interview people which is part of what I do. I have a podcast called Terry Shepherd in Conversation. TerryShepherdInConversation.com is the website. I have done probably over 100 author interviews. One of the first questions I ask is, which is more important, plot or characters? And to a person, they all say characters. And that is what I love most about the research that I did, because part of it was reading a lot of really amazing authors and some people that I had not known before. And I targeted them in my podcast interviews. The whole reason I started the podcast, I wanted to have a reason for people to say yes to me. And that's how I learned to write. Because my background is a whole lot different. I am filled with flaws and imperfections. For many years, I was a corporate guy. And I first came to Jacksonville in 1992 to run what was then Continental Cablevision. It was the largest cable operation in the Continental Constellation. And I was lucky enough to be your head servant for 8 years. Even after the company was sold, I loved Jacksonville so much that I stayed here to start my own business as an entrepreneur. I did that for 5 years and re-entered the corporate world as a turnaround guy and had a wonderful experience helping good teams get their mojo back and discover their greatness. So that was what my life was like beforehand, and I did that across the country. But when we decided finally to come back to Jacksonville, because this is where our family is, I needed something to do. And I was feeling, like maybe some of you feel, that my life as a useful person was over because I could no longer do the things that I'd love to do in the corporate world. And one of those things, because of my background and my parents and the people they exposed me to, was I was determined to break open the doors, crack the glass ceiling for women, minorities, and the disabled. When I came back to Jacksonville, ostensibly retired from corporate life, my shrink said, why not take a look at writing? You can create your own fictional metaverse where you can put these same people in positions of power, adventure, and authority. What I hope when I write my books about Jessica and her very diverse cast of characters is that they will inspire the real people who live in those bodies, who look and live like them, who maybe can identify with one or two of their motivations, conflicts, and flaws, to want to grow up to be those kind of heroes. Remember, the best thing about us is our flaws. And if you think about the detectives that you know, even Sherlock Holmes was a drug addict. That is part of the story. And I think it's part of what draws us as an audience to our books, because we can relate to some of the challenges the protagonists face, and we love how they can overcome them. Actions and nuance, the choices our characters make, which send them either into the darkness or toward the light. You imbue your characters that you write with those same things. Noble, selfish, complex motivations can be good or bad. They're all very nuanced, and some of the best writers nuance those things so well. They can bring that to you in the dialogue between their characters. They can bring that to you in one paragraph of exposition. Motivation, flaws, and growth potential, right? The best stories and characters, no matter who you create, all have these things going for them. We're very interested in the character arc, how they grow. We're interested in why they do what they do. Jessica, for example, is very driven by a strict moral code that she has, and she makes some bad decisions because of that. And one of her flaws is that she's got a really short fuse when she thinks she's right, and she's not always right. So now we come to the fun part, the research. And I have a lot of resources and links for you in the PDF on this. I have examples of books that I recommend that show this very well. I have a whole playlist for you of YouTube videos that taught me a lot about how to write diverse characters. Reading books by the authors who actually are doing it well with diverse background. One of the interesting things that I subscribe to is Masterclass. Judy Bloom's whole thing that she teaches on Masterclass is fascinating. Walt Mosley is another one who's on Masterclass and talks about how he writes. Listening to their voices and their backstories can teach you an awful lot about how to do it. And then, respectfully, engaging with people who are living those lives. Jessica is based on Tracy Ruiz, who is a honest-to-goodness 25-year Latina cop at a real police agency who was recently retired. And when she started, she was in the middle of a patriarchy. She had a very rough career. One of the reasons I decided to write Jessica was because as we talked, she told me these tales, which had unhappy endings. And I said, wait a minute, what if I could rewrite some of those where you win? What would that feel like? It was very therapeutic for her to see that happen. And it was very fascinating for me to hear her talk, to go and spend time with her family and immerse myself in her life. I've probably ridden over the course of my lifetime with dozens of police officers, and I tried to find the women that were still working to ride along with them on shift and watch them do their thing. I learned a fascinating commonality about female cops. In many cases, in conflict situations, women bring a stronger skill set to the moment because they de-escalate. Perhaps because of the testosterone, our upbringing, expectations. Studies have shown that men sometimes feel they must meet the threat with a threat. We go into fight mode very quickly. Tracy is short. She's very strong. She's lived through a traffic accident that almost killed her. She had to learn to walk again. She had to learn to talk again. And she went back into the police force after doing all that stuff. But when I ride with her, the biggest question she asks is, how can I help you? That is one of the ultimate de-escalators. This next character type is an example of how we can research, avoid stereotypes, and create a memorable character. In the course of a career, every mystery writer will conjure up a killer. Most of us are not bad people, so we have to learn what's going on inside their heads, what their motivations are, what their strengths are, what their flaws are. And then Chasing Vega, the villain I created, is a very bad woman who's doing bad things for the right reasons. I love those kind of characters. Even a bad person is worth some empathy and worth some love. And now we come to one of the key considerations when you think about your diverse cast, the difference between respectful representation and harmful stereotypes. Portraying them as the rich, full human beings that they are and not necessarily the caricatures that we might see on a situation comedy where we tend to throw those people into the old school stereotypes. Push back against common tropes. I love the fact that in the very first Star Trek pilot, the number one person behind the captain was female. Captain Janeway in the later Star Trek series, brilliantly played by the actress Kate Mulgrew. And then the nuances. I recommend Turner Classic Movies. And these are traditional roles, but as a writer, what I would challenge you to do is to imagine putting a diverse character into that situation, into that body. How would they make that happen? And avoid the harmful stereotyping, right? It's out there. And we all come programmed. The older we are, it's harder to do. We are men and women of our times. There are unintentionally hurtful things we've all said, which were part of our programming growing up. And you want to try and avoid that flatness. Give your cast members depth. Give them backstories to fill them out as persons. During Jessica's first appearance in Chasing Vega, we learned that our star was once a swimming sensation whose father would not let her go to the Olympics, even when her life role model for her, who also happened to be a Latina swimmer, invited her to try out. He wouldn't let her do that. She became a cop just to make him mad. Her sidekick, Alexandra Clark, who originally in the first draft was a much stronger character than Jessica, is a computer forensics genius who happens to be a lesbian. And she's fearless. She does not put up with any garbage from the chief or anybody in the chain of command. And she's a lot of fun because the two of them together encourage each other to draw outside the lines and to follow their moral compasses, which leads to trouble. It's okay to let your stars be themselves, whatever they happen to be. And some of that has to do with their background. One of my favorite author interviews was with a woman named Betty Kearse, and she wrote a book called The Other Madisons. Betty Kearse comes from a line descended from an enslaved person who was a lover of President James Madison. There is a history in African culture where they identify a person in the tribe who becomes the oracle. This is before writing, before the internet. And that oracle spends their entire life hearing the history of the tribe. They learn it verbatim, and they become the one to pass it on. Betty brings a unique background to the story. She's a physician and a geneticist. When the time came, her mother brought a shoebox to her, and she said, "You are now the family oracle." And the book, The Other Madisons, was the result. Remember, intention versus impact. My intention is always to show people, even my villains, in the best possible light for us to understand what it is that motivates them to do what they do. And I can't always do it. It was fascinating to me that the first piece of advice I got as I circulated my story to my Latina cop friends was that they told me, "Glock pistols do not have safeties." That was their first piece of feedback to me. It wasn't about how they drew their characters. The other thing is that if you've done your research right and you portray them well, is this. Some of your sensitivity readers will be uncomfortable with the authenticity. And ultimately, it's the audience perception, right? Our ultimate goal is to make our stories saleable so that people will want to buy them. And that's where you have to think about, how is the audience going to perceive everything from how I describe the locations, the kind of vehicles, the chase scenes, the gunplay, the love scenes? How do I describe them in a way that's going to make people want to buy the book, want to read it, and want to read the next one? Here are the takeaways. Authenticity is a process, not a single step. We are always growing human beings. We are always evolving, and there are always opportunities for us to learn. I'm so grateful that I stopped being a corporate guy, because now I have all of these friends in Sisters in Crime and at the conferences that I've been to that I never would have met unless I found the courage to become a writer. Actively seek critiques. One of my favorite phrases is, feedback is the breakfast of champions. So I want to hear from people about what I got right and what I got wrong in the books. Back when I was a corporate guy, I always thanked people who said, "I love your service," but I learned from the people who said, "This is where you're getting it wrong." And then to have the courage to step outside your comfort zone, write that book, get it published, even if it's imperfect, because every book is going to be better than the last one. The biggest fear we all have is that this is the last book we're going to write because everybody's going to hate it and we'll be run out of town. That's not the case. You just have to keep writing. So that's it in a nutshell. This is the link, terryshepherd.com/NFSINC, and that's where the PDF will be. Based upon your questions in our conversation today, I'll add more things to fill in the blanks for any of the questions you may have. With that, let me turn it over to you. Tell me what you want to know. The question is, tell us more about Masterclass. Masterclass.com is a fascinating way to immerse yourself in a variety of topics. Jane Goodall is on there. Ron Howard is on there, teaching, directing. Jodie Foster's there. There are a number of writers. James Patterson's there. That's how I met Dan Brown. Masterclass presents their concept of what they do in a way that will give you a good grounding in it. It's not necessarily as good as going to a seminar where an expert speaking directly to you about the topic. But there will be other things besides writing in Masterclass that will interest you. RamirezandClarkPublishers.com. Ramirez and Clark are Jessica Ramirez and Alexander Clark, my two protagonists. We started Ramirez and Clark to handle my independent publishing of my books. I made every mistake. I learned about Amazon KDP, about Ingram Spark, about Lulu, about Book Baby. I learned about story consultants and editors and cover designers and all that stuff. What happened along the way is my friends started asking me, how do I format my manuscript for publication? Or what does a story consultant do? Or how do I find a really good cover designer who will create a cover that fits my story? And I had made friends in all these spaces along the way. In the beginning, I said, I'm glad to help you. I got the software. Send me your Word document. I'll format it for you. But finally, my wife and my business manager said, you need to start charging for this stuff. So Ramirez and Clark has evolved from just solely owning my copyrights to a services organization. We're not a traditional publisher in that we don't sign contracts with people and we don't pay royalties, but they're allowed to use our indicia and our brand if they want to. They don't have to. But what we do is we help them to get their books published wherever they want them to be published. And that's become a pretty big job. And another thing that I do is I do book narrations. I'm now the voice of Patrick Flint, Pamela Fagan Hutchins, great detective. And I'm on the second book for her. I'm on my 20th book narration. And the way I got started at that was that the narration is my final edit. After it's been through everything, the last thing I do is I read the book aloud to my wife. And that's where I find all the little stuff that I've missed. But also, because part of my background is that I was a broadcaster and have been doing radio and movie trailers and commercials and things for over 50 years, is that I understood a little bit about the nuances of voice acting. And that also is what happens in my head as I'm writing. Do your characters ever talk to you as you're driving down the street? Do they tell you things and take the story in directions you never thought it would? That's a good thing. You're not crazy. You're just an author. What is a story consultant? Great question. One of the things I do at conferences, I try and find the tables where people are by themselves or alone, and I'll sit down and I'll ask them, what's the coolest thing that's happened to you since you started writing? Ran into this woman, and she said, story consultant Dawn Alexander. And I said, tell me more about that. What does a story consultant do? They're not developmental editors. They look at the overall story. They look at the characters that you've built, and they go into a deep dive with you about that. And that is exactly what I needed when I was writing Vega, because I'd never written fiction before. And Dawn taught me most of the basics about how to write fiction. Story consultants are especially helpful when you are first learning the craft, when you are exploring a different writing genre or introducing a new character. Anytime that little voice in your head is telling you, I'm feeling outside of my comfort zone. So that's what a story consultant does. My process is that I'll write the first draft, and then it goes to Dawn, then it goes to a developmental editor that I have, then it goes out to the beta readers. Depending upon the type of characters I have in there, I try and find people who live in those bodies to read and tell me if I got them right, wrong. Then it goes to the copy editor, proofreader, and then I print it.
How do you handle accents and individual lingo of the various diverse characters?
I try to avoid too much of that. And even in my narration, I learned this from Tom Hanks. If you have not heard his read of Ann Patchett's The Dutch House, Ann Patchett gets great narrators. Hanks did The Dutch House, and her latest one, Meryl Streep, did that. Two of the greatest actors of our time. And Hanks does not change a thing. He brings his voice up a little tiny bit for the women and maybe will change the timbre just a little bit if it's an accent. I can't do them. I can do a Scottish accent. So in the second book, I actually made one of the characters in Great Britain a Scottish cop because that's the only thing I could do. I couldn't do a British accent. Here's a side story about my experience with Jessica. I created a Twitter handle for her. And I was very clear that she was a fictional detective. But I put her out there and she started responding to police agencies. And she developed a fan base in Great Britain of cops. She got two marriage proposals from cops over there. The feedback was, you have to bring her here. So the whole second act of the Chasing the Captain, my second Jessica Ramirez book, takes place in London because they demanded it. And so when it came time for me to actually have the first draft done, I reached out to a PC with the Metropolitan Police in London, and I said, take a look at this. Tell me what I got right. Tell me what I got wrong. I learned enough about policing in the UK to include two London cops with key roles in Chasing the Captain. Another example of how research and talking with people who live those lives can lead you in unexpectedly delicious directions. Another gratifying experience is receiving email from people who identify with my characters, who never thought that they might be able to do some of these things. In Chasing Vega, Jessica's banished right out of the chute. She gets suspended for 30 days, so she goes out to visit her uncle, who's a sheriff in Coconino County, Arizona, dealing with a combination of a serial killer and a hacker. And their medical examiner there is a fellow by the name of Joey Price, who is on the autism spectrum. And I'm very lucky because my best friend's son is on that spectrum, and I've known him since he was a baby, And so I have a little bit better understanding about what's locked inside that beautiful mind that the rest of the world can't necessarily see because they're judging based upon discomfort with social interaction. And the emails that make me the happiest are when I hear from people who are on the spectrum and say, I never thought I could become a doctor. And I tell them, hey, look, most of the doctors I know are on the spectrum already. That's part of what makes them so brilliant. But that's the fun part and why I encourage you to write diverse characters, because there are things that they can do that most people wouldn't expect they could do. And it's our job as storytellers to open that door so that the rest of the world can see how important each of us are as individuals. The biggest takeaway for me as an author of diverse characters is that I have developed a much deeper empathy for the human condition and for everybody I see. Everyone I meet, I wonder what those layers are of the onion that I could possibly not know about. There's the old saying that we all carry burdens that nobody sees. Now when I look at somebody, I almost feel that paranormal sense of brotherhood, sisterhood, and we're all in it together. Imbue the stories you write with people who are not like you. Learn how to write them in a way that is authentic, and it will help you grow in your relationships too.